Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Rockin' Retrospect. I am your host, Nick Bambeck. Today, joining me is a returning guest, one of the first 10 guests I've ever had on the show, and he's finally back with us. It's Wes Gabrielson. How's it going, Wes?
Glad to be here. Doing great.
Awesome. I'm so glad we had you on for Toto 2.5 years ago, which seems like a lifetime ago, quite honestly.
Yeah, but at the same time flies, because I remember how much fun that conversation was.
I remember so many things about that conversation, but the one is our love of the song Pamela.
Oh, Pamela. I heard that the other day, and I'm not going to lie, I turned it off.
Pamela turned you off now.
Yeah, I'm a big Toto fan, but that song doesn't do it for me.
Well, I've been talking to Wes for years now, and we've been conversing back and forth for a while about episodes to do for the show and to bring him back on the show. We've talked about some artist episodes that we wanted, and one of them is actually the guest that we're going to talk about tonight. And this has probably been, oh my God, like 5 or 6 months in the making. And that's Peter Frampton. Why did you choose Peter Frampton for this episode, Wes?
Oh, well, this is a little, it's a little emotional for me. It hits home. I love Peter Frampton's music, and you know, his guitar playing, his voice, his positivity. But the kind of the genesis of that love was actually my uncle, who passed away about 10 years ago, was the person that introduced me to Peter Frampton. And I remember visiting him in Chicago, and I was a kid, and he had this album sitting out there that was Frampton Comes Alive. And I thought, what is this guy? What is this album? So he put it on for me and kind of explained who Frampton was. And I just loved the music. So this is a little bit of an homage to my late uncle.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that story.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you got to come on. And I should have really introduced you, Wes, because you are the first guest to come on Rockin' Retrospect that I know of that is a Hall of Famer. You are a Pickleball Hall of Famer, right?
I was blessed in 2022 to be inducted, or as I call indicted, into the into the Pickleball Hall of Fame. Very appreciative. I think there were a lot of other good candidates that were more worthy, but it was a cool honor for myself and my family. So
that is so awesome. I'm so glad that you are now an inductee, and I could always call you a Hall of Famer because you are one. Wes is so modest, but yeah, he's done so many great things in his life. So I'm just so happy to know him. Like I said, we're going to talk about Peter Frampton tonight. He is currently nominated for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we're going to talk about his career and his legacy and just some of our favorite Peter Frampton songs and albums. It's going to be a really, really fun conversation tonight. And Wes is a great guy. Now, Wes, what is your earliest memory of Peter Frampton?
Again, it's that introduction by my uncle. And I was, gosh, I was probably in elementary school. And, you know, when I saw that album cover of Frampton with the long blonde hair, and we started listening to it, and my uncle just had this immense passion for music and this love of Frampton. And I think we listened to the whole album, which is a long album. So I think it's a double album. And I just loved the positivity and the crowd interaction. I'm a big sucker for live albums. I love them. You know, yeah. I think about Cheap Trick live at Budokan is such a great album. I just love a good live album, and so this really has just resonated with me throughout my life. And to kind of keep that legacy and that love of Frampton that my uncle had alive, I actually saw Frampton live here last calendar year. My mom and I went to a concert, and it was amazing. The energy, I mean, the guy's 72 years old at the time and, you know, going through some health challenges, and he just put on a kick-ass 3-hour show. It was unbelievable. So I just love his energy.
Me too. I've seen him live too. I saw him in 2017 with Greg Allman, and I saved that for this episode because I mentioned it to Wes earlier. I saw Frampton open for him, and the one thing I remember about that concert is that Frampton covered David Bowie, and he covered I believe Heroes. Yeah, I think it was Heroes. Mm-hmm. And then he also covered Chris Cornell's song Black Hole Sun that he did with Soundgarden. And both Bowie and Cornell recently passed away. And it was very moving, the instrumental tributes that Frampton did. And of course, he did his other big songs that night as well. And then I saw Greg Allman, because I don't know if you know this, Wes, the Allman Brothers Band are one of my three or four favorite bands of all time. I didn't know that.
That's awesome.
They are just like, talk about a band that was iconic thanks to a live album. Ethel Maurice is just one of the most incredible records I've ever listened to, studio or live. And it's just a band that invoked this idea of Southern rock. And I can go on and on. I could do an episode, I'm sure, about the Allman Brothers Band. But I got to see Greg Allman there. And I was so elated to go. And I went with my dad because he likes both Frampton and Allman. And I'm really happy because Allman passed away not too long after that. So I always tell listeners and friends and followers, always go see artists if you can, because you never know when they're going to pass away. So that was my thing about Frampton.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I've made that a mission, kind of. I know we're still in the COVID world, but kind of post-COVID, quote unquote, is to see more artists. And
absolutely.
I've seen in the last couple of years, and focusing on artists, like you said, that are a little bit older as well, because you just never know. I mean, I've seen Sting recently. I saw James Taylor. I saw Jackson Browne, Peter Frampton, some of these artists that I saw. Mavis Staples last summer. She's like 84 years old.
I'll tell you my earliest memory of Peter Frampton. It's actually not Frampton himself, but it's very famous cover of one of his songs that happened in the 90s. I remember I was about 5 years old when this cover came out, and it was Big Mountain's version of Baby, I Love Your Way. And they had a version that also blended with Freebird. It's weird. It's not really that good of a song, really. But that song is always one of the first things I think of when I think of Frampton, because that was probably my earliest memory of his music.
Yeah, I have also heard that cover version, and it is kind of weird that the Freebird tie-in is also in there. And I agree with you. I'm not that much of a fan of that song, but I know it evokes a memory for you.
And it does. It's like weird American reggae, and that just seems like an oxymoron, American reggae.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But hey, all the power to him.
Absolutely. But that was my earliest memory of Peter Frampton. So, but it's just funny because it's not even Peter Frampton, really, but by default. Let's move on to talk about his career. Peter Frampton was born in 1950 in England, and he was a music child prodigy. And he worked in various music bands in his teen years. And he performed with such bands as The Herd and Humble Pie. And I just was curious, Wes, if you had any thoughts on those two particular bands, because they're pretty well known if you like music. Any thoughts on The Herd or Humble Pie?
Well, yeah, and I think even predating that, it's kind of fascinating to think about just Frampton's connections in the music industry. And you go back to his childhood, when he's in his formative, early teen years, and he went to school with David Bowie. I don't know if a lot of people know that. And, he used to, there was a story that, Bowie, I think, was probably 3 or 4 years older than him, but they used to sit outside and sing Buddy Holly songs with each other because they loved Buddy Holly. And just having that connection was super cool. And then, even before he got into The Herd, he was in a band called The True Beats. I think he was 14, and they were managed by Bill Wyman, who was the bass player for the Rolling Stones. So early on, he had just connections with who would become later rock superstars, or I guess Wyman was at the time. But I think when he was in The Herd, he was 16. And, in listening to The Herd, if folks haven't done that before, it's kind of this unique blend of pop, but also some psychedelic rock at the same time. And, they had three top 15 hits in the UK when he was the lead singer and guitar player of that band. you know, at the age of 16 through 18. So he was already kind of designated as a, dare I use the phrase, you know, essentially a teen idol at that point, being featured on the cover of this, this magazine Rave, which was a teen magazine. And so, you know, a lot of success and kind of, you know, touted as this next great superstar, before leaving that band and joining Steve Marriott, who had left the Small Faces to start Humble Pie. And what was really cool about that is you had two amazing singers in the same group. What's really unique about that band is, you know, Frampton is known for a little bit smoother voice, obviously being a killer guitar player, but Marriott has this really soulful, gritty voice. So if folks haven't had a chance to listen to some tracks by Humble Pie, I feel like you can tell a significant difference between when Frampton is singing and when Marriott is singing, because the style of singing is so different. But I don't know. Have you spent much time listening to Humble Pie?
Absolutely. I think they're such an underrated band, because I'm a huge fan of Steve Marriott, who, of course, like you said, was one of the members of Small Faces, which is, I think, a supremely underrated Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted band.
Yeah, I mean, he and going back through and listening to some of my favorite tracks, of course, I found more and more songs by them that I loved. I mean, the first song from the first album that I discovered from them, Town and Country, had such a Frampton-esque song. If you love Frampton and you don't know about Humble Pie and you go back, it's quintessential Frampton. Dare I say, one of my favorite tracks by them, it has a very unique name, One Eye Trouser Snake Rumba. That'll make you think many times, but just as pure Frampton on the guitar. You know, there's a couple of Willie Dixon covers like I'm Ready, Shine On, which is, for those that have seen Frampton live, he plays that song a lot. And then again, when we think about Frampton, we think about live albums, and, you know, in Humble Pie, they had a great live album that really catapulted them to become superstars right around 1971. And he's quoted by saying, you know, I didn't want to be locked into being in this band forever, because I knew we were going places. And when folks think about that, it's kind of ironic, because you think in music, you make it, you're going places with a band, you would think you would stay, but he decides to leave, you know, which is a very unique path that he takes. So really an interesting backstory of two very successful bands that he's a part of, you know, even before the age of 21, which is quite remarkable.
His career reminds me so much of Steve Winwood in many ways. I think there's so many parallels and similarities, because like Peter Frampton, Steve Winwood was in the Spencer Davis group and also Traffic. I also adore Steve Winwood, and I could talk about him for forever. But I thought about that while doing this episode, that it's this sort of going in and out of bands, going in and out of work, and you're like, holy crap, they're part of some of the biggest records and worked with some of the greatest people of all time. So I don't know if sometimes you have those epiphany moments when you're researching artists' careers too, Wes, you're like, oh, wow, like, it's amazing, like, what Frampton has been able to do. Like, he worked on All Things Must Pass. I think people don't realize that.
Yeah, and you know, the Winwood connection, I thought about it a little bit, or the comparison, I should say, and I love that you brought that up, because, you know, a lot of people kind of more in our age range know Winwood from, you know, Higher Love and Roll With It and the songs from the 80s, really, but they don't know about Traffic, and they don't know about the Spencer Davis group, where, you know, I think he was 16 or 17 when he's singing Give Me Some Lovin' and I'm a Man and some of those great tracks. So that's a great comparison that you made.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I just think it's the fact that they're in these like hugely successful bands, and then they eventually pursue a solo career, because that was their end game, was to branch out. And part of the reason why Frampton left Humble Pie was because they were, like you said, going in a different direction. They were kind of going to this like bluesier, more soulful creative direction that Steve Marriott, who's fantastic, really liked, and he kept wanting to go that. But I think Frampton kind of wanted to dial it back a little and kind of go to the music that he preferred. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. But sometimes artists just drift apart, and there's really, that's just a fact of life, quite honestly. So yeah, I'm glad we got to talk a little bit about that. And I just a follow-up question, because now we're going to start talking more exclusively about Frampton's solo work and even his session work, which is really important as well, is I'm just curious, what makes him a unique and unforgettable performer?
I mean, from videos I'd seen, from just listening to the album, and now to being able to see him live a year ago, I think there's a couple of key attributes that just make him a stellar performer. First of all, the guy has such infectious, positive energy. I mean, for those of you in life that are appreciate people that, you know, consider the glass, you know, half full versus half empty, he is the epitome of a glass half full human, both on and off the stage. And his energy, his positivity, his enthusiasm, I mean, his ability to interact with the crowd is underrated, in my opinion. You know, you think about, you know, Freddie Mercury and some of these other artists that are just were amazing at connecting with crowds. I'd put Frampton up there as well. And he's known for his guitar playing, obviously, which is incredible. But the guy is a great singer. I don't think he gets enough due. And the ability to do all he does on the guitar while coupling it with his amazing singing voice and the range that he sings within, all those things make him just so fun to watch and listen to.
Absolutely. And I think you capture it really well, is that he is just such a humble person, like pun intended, because he was in humble pie. But no, he's just a beautiful soul. And for me, I think with Peter Frampton, he has this command of the audience and their attention. And he's so respectful, but also so skilled. And I don't know, in many ways, he embodies the spirit of rock and roll, but then he's sort of also just a genuinely good person. Like the work that he does, like for charities, and the work that he does with other artists. Like I find him to be a very selfless artist in many ways. I don't know if you might agree with that, in the sense that like he can, of course, be in the spotlight like he did for Frampton Comes Alive, but he's also just as fine playing backup guitar or do mm-hmm. session work for like David Bowie or Billy Preston or Ringo Starr or artists like that. And I think that going in and out is sort of a gift, and I don't think a lot of people give him credit for that. Like the interchangeability of talents, like some yes. people, they could only be like the center of attention, and of course he can be, but he also knows when to dial it back. And I think that just shows restraint, and I think that's part of why he's such a great musician.
Yeah, and don't you think too, as a, you know, if we dare to dream, but if we were an artist of that level of skill and popularity and superstardom, I think it would be just so fun too. I mean, there's the ego component where people have to be that center of attention, but you know, if you get to play, if you get asked to play on All Things Must Pass by George Harrison, you're going to do it. Whether you're the center of attention or not. What an amazing experience to share ideas and play with people that you idolize and respect. And I think, you know, I think in modern days we see so much recognition on albums of guest appearances that there's so much music from the 60s and even 70s where folks don't realize that certain artists played on these tracks just because the credit wasn't given initially. And so, you know, Frampton played on, I know, you know, we may get into that later, but Frampton just played on so much good music that people may not realize.
Absolutely. I think that that's definitely true. And also just something that I have to say is of Window Changes, of course, his debut album from 1972. And just the fact that he got a former Beatle in Ringo Starr and Billy Preston, and he had other people like Spooky Tooth's Mick Jones, who of course would later go on to do Foreigner, on that album for your first album, and you're 21, 22. I think that's just incredible.
That's amazing. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
He's also a really good covers artist. Like he knows how to take a song that is pre-existing and make it his own. And I think that's a very good thing that he's able to do, because I didn't even mention like James Taylor. I think James Taylor is the same way. He is really good at capturing a song, but putting his unique stamp on it to make it great. I don't know if you feel that way as well with his covers.
Yeah. And I think I kind of call these, you know, when you see an artist live or you listen to them, I call it a frozen moment where they just get you to freeze and stop everything that you're doing and thinking about, and you're hyper-focused on them. I know you mentioned earlier we were talking about some of his covers, and when I saw him last year, he broke out into Black Hole Sun. I, you know, being from the Pacific Northwest and, you know, the birth of grunge and good hard rock here in, you know, Seattle, a couple hours north of myself, I'm a huge, huge Soundgarden fan. I still can't believe they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hopefully one day soon. But when he broke into that song, I stopped and I saw people around me stop talking and just were fixated on that instrumental. So I agree with you. He's amazing at taking a cover and putting his own twist on it to get you to freeze and listen up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he's able to do that. And he had some really big hits with it. Like he covered Stevie Wonder's Signed, Sealed, Delivered. Mm-hmm. And he also did...
Can you Jumpin' Jack Flash?
Of course, yeah. That was on Wind of Change. Well, I always like the Black Hole Sun one. I think that that's a fantastic rendition as well. Also, he does a really good, almost instrumental version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. I don't know if you ever heard it.
Oh, that's what he closed the show with.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think there was a dry eye in the audience during that song. I mean, just given everything that he's going through right now. I mean, yeah, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
Oh, I love to hear that. I love that he closed with While My Guitar Gently Weeps. I've listened to his version, and it's great. Let's talk about an album that we talked a little bit about earlier in the show, and that's Frampton Comes Alive. This was released in 1976, and this was one of the biggest albums of the 70s, and it's an album that a lot of people point to as one of the greatest live albums of all time. And something that's very interesting that a lot of people don't realize is not only did this album go 8 times platinum, which is incredible for a live album, by the way, one of the best-selling ones from that regard, but a lot of people don't realize that he recorded Frampton Comes Alive in multiple locations. So he recorded at the Wonderland Ballroom in San Francisco, and he also recorded at Plattsboro, New York, which is upstate. Mm-hmm. And one place that he actually recorded was the Long Island Arena in Commack. Mm-hmm. And why do I say that? Because I'm from Long Island, and Commack is only about 15 minutes from where my old house used to be. So
nostalgia.
It's nostalgia. And I was like, oh my God. Yes, I love to bring up Long Island anytime I can on the show, because why not? And anyway, I'm just curious some of your thoughts on Frampton Comes Alive, Wes, and like, why do you think it's such a special album?
What I'm going to say next is not my fixation moment on the album, but I think what sets Frampton apart from a lot of artists, and it's definitely mastered on this album, is his use of the talk box. I mean, I think when you think about guitar playing and people using different styles and tuning, you know, having that, I used to call it the robot voice you listen to of him playing and breathing through that, you know, speaking through that tube. He actually was introduced to that, to go back to an earlier topic, during the All Things Must Pass session. When he was recording with George Harrison, and there was an American producer and steel guitarist named Pete Drake, who introduced him to the talk box in, you know, I think that was 1970, while he was there and recording a few tracks on that album. And that is featured on multiple songs on Frampton Comes Alive. So that's definitely a unique, recognizable feature. Just a little context, Frampton Comes Alive, I think it was January of 1976 when that was released. And like you mentioned, it was recorded over multiple shows, both in New York and California. I found out that the double album initially cost $7.98 to purchase. And I think anyone that bought that album in 76 and 77 and beyond would say it was probably worth every penny that they spent. You mentioned 8 times platinum. It was number one on the album charts for 10 weeks non-consecutive, but stayed a relevant at a relevant level on the album charts for a couple of years. And, you know, kind of the, besides being obviously in the Grammy Hall of Fame as an inductee for that album, 3 massive hits that were now live, and I believe were from earlier albums, right? So he had many of his songs were from earlier albums that he was playing live. You know, Baby, I Love Your Way, you can't be alive right now and not have heard that song, right? In multiple areas, but I think that was number 12 on the charts. Show Me the Way was number 6. And then my favorite song, Do You Feel Like I Do, was number 10. And, you know, 15 minutes of amazing musicianship. And what I love is a lot of classic radio stations will play it in entirety, whereas some would cut it off at, you know, halfway. But locally here in the Portland, Oregon area, KGON did a great job of playing the full thing. So I appreciate that. Why do I think it's so flipping good? The musicianship, the energy, everything that Frampton brings, but the interaction with the audience, you can tell they're having the time of their life. And when he starts, you know, and Do You Feel Like I Do, having that talk box inserted in that song, the crowd goes crazy even before he even says a word or plays a note. And so for all those reasons, I just love that album. I think it's amazing.
I totally agree, Wes. And I think one of the things about Frampton Comes Alive is that he was about, at this time, 25, 26, but he's pretty much a veteran at this point, who's been in the rock and roll world for almost a decade at this point. And this is kind of his breakout moment into the mainstream. And it's really a testament to him and the fact that he became a star really on the strength of a live album, and one that would become a radio staple, especially on classic rock radio stations later on, where, like you said, they would play all 15 minutes of Do You Feel Like We Do. And I love the fact that he says, like, we do, plural, with the audience, like I do. And I think that's really clever of him to have that in the song. And what's really special too about the album is, like, you hear the crowd is almost as important as him in the recording. We hear them chant, we hear the gestures and sounds that we hear from the recording, but it's really just one of the best experiences in terms of live music that I've ever heard. And it's one that, like I said, it's so interesting when an artist kind of breaks out like a live album. That's why it reminds me of like Cheap Trick, like you mentioned earlier, with Live at Budokan, another band that sometimes their best recordings are their live ones. Another one that I think of too, that I really love, that I think is very underrated, is the Jay Giles Band. They didn't have nowhere near the success with their live albums like Frampton and Cheap Trick, but some of the best live recordings you'll ever hear in your life, I swear to God.
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks are familiar with Jay Giles Band from the 80s hits, from Freeze Frame and Centerfold, but such a different and, dare I say, in my opinion, much better musical output early on. But some of those early songs, they're so good. If you haven't had a chance, folks out there, you got to check out their live albums. And, you know, I just think with Frampton, you just, I don't know, you put that record on and or that album on and you feel like you're there, you know? And yeah, it's really hard to do that from an audio recording. You know, you watch a video, you got a big flat screen, you got the music going, you can kind of feel like you're in your own little home theater, you're at the concert. But to create that energy and that feeling and that experience just from an audio standpoint is really difficult to pull off. And he's a master of it. I mean,
I think also something that I realized until we were doing this episode is that he also produced this album. I did not know. I don't know if you knew that either. I was kind of stunned that he was the one that produced it, because it sounds fantastic even today.
Yeah, I mean, they did, you know, he did such a good job of taking all those tracks and, you know, and finding the perfect blend of all of those live songs to make the album what it is. And, you know, I know we talked earlier about, you know, some of the session work. You talked about Nilsson, you talked about, what are we talking about? Oh, George Harrison. And, you know, he played on Ringo's stuff and some Jerry Lee Lewis. But, you know, a couple years after this, here's my guilty pleasure. You know, this album, Frampton Comes Alive, you know, catapulted him to become a superstar. And maybe without that, this album, he wouldn't have been playing guitar on the title track from Grease, sung by Frankie Valli, which is one of my favorite songs with the Bee Gees singing harmony. But, you know, a lot of people don't know that he plays on that. Maybe he doesn't get that opportunity without Frampton Comes Alive. I'm just saying.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think also with Frampton Comes Alive, it's really weird because he sort of became, in a weird way, like a heartthrob. It's weird. It's kind of hard to articulate, but I don't know if you know what I mean. He would go on the cover of like Rolling Stone and other major publications, and he became like this almost quasi-teen idol in a weird way. I don't know if you agree with that.
I agree. I mean, we already talked about how he was a teen idol from, you know, when he was in The Herd being on that album cover, which kind of led to his departure from that band. But I heard someone say the other day that album, you know, when Frampton Comes Alive was recorded, I think this person felt like a lot of his fans were men who loved the rock and the guitar. But after that album, there were a lot more females in the audience because he kind of became this heartthrob, right? Appearing on these magazine covers, he's a good looking young guy who now had a wider audience.
Frampton was such a superstar. Like, he owned 1976, 77, really the late 70s. He's one of the go-to rock stars. And that would help keep him at least as a known figure, because you could not escape Frampton Comes Alive, it seemed, in 1976, 1977. What a legendary album. And he would go on to do I'm In You and Where Should I Be and Breaking All the Rules and other great albums that would follow Frampton Comes Alive. But that was kind of his, at the zenith of his popularity. Let's transition to talk a little bit about something I really love to talk about, and that's Frampton's work in movie and TV productions, which he's appeared in a lot more than I think people realize. So do any in particular stand out to you, Wes?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's the obvious one that folks who were appreciating him at the time of, you know, right after Frampton Comes Alive was, you know, his appearance as Billy Shears in the Sgt. Pepper movie, which I believe was 1978. But before that, I found in some research, he actually was played a guitar player in a music film called Son of Dracula with his buddies Ringo Starr and Harry Nilsson. That was in 74. In the 1978, he appeared in an episode of a World War II drama on TV called Baba Black Sheep. But those three were from the 70s. And then for folks and you're in my generation and a little bit older, a little bit younger, you know, he made some appearances vocally in The Simpsons and Family Guy. You know, a TV show that I love, I used to be a history teacher and a government teacher. There's a show called Madam Secretary, where he made a couple of cameo appearances. But I think for folks that are really into rock and roll and, you know, movies associated with rock and roll, aside from Sgt. Pepper, you know, Almost Famous, he had a lot of involvement in that, the great Cameron Crowe film. He wrote a lot of the music for the fictional band in the movie Stillwater. He played a lot of the guitar parts in the recordings that went into the soundtrack. And he even taught actor Billy Crudup how to play guitar, who was the, you know, the main guitarist in the band. And I believe he actually, if I'm correct here, he had a cameo in the film as the manager of Humble Pie, which was the band that he was in the 60s and 70s.
Yes, I love Almost Famous. That's one of my favorite movies. And yes, that is absolutely the where his cameo was in that movie, ironically for his former band.
Yep.
I think my one of my favorites is The Simpsons, where he is with Sonic Youth at the Lollapalooza or like whatever festival that they're at. And it's just, it's so funny.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's been in such a variety of film and TV, whether it's lending the voice in an animated series or playing these unique roles from the 70s and beyond.
And the episode for listeners of the Peter Frampton episode was Homer Palooza, which is one of the best. I don't know how big of a Simpsons fan you are, but that is literally one of the best Simpsons episodes out there. and it's the one with the cannonball. Oh, it's so good. And I forgot, it's called Hullabalooza because, you know, they couldn't do Lollapalooza, I guess, for
sure. Copyright.
Legal reasons, but
yeah.
Oh, it's so good. Now, we've been talking a lot about his career, Wes, but I'm really curious, what do you think is the most underrated aspect of Peter Frampton's career?
I think it's twofold. Number one, I think it's the output of good material, because again, I think everyone fixates on Frampton Comes Alive. You know, they know that, you know, those great songs that were performed live are either covers or their tracks from earlier albums, which honestly didn't have as much commercial success. But post Frampton Comes Alive, you know, he has a couple of big hits and great albums that people don't give him credit for. So I will say, number one, the musical output is more widespread than people realize. And I think from a musicianship / singing standpoint, it's his singing. I mean, people know him as one of the great guitar players of all time, and he is. He absolutely is, but I will go on record. I'm a pretty positive, even-keeled human. I could not believe that in the most updated Rolling Stone list, you know where I'm going here, with greatest guitar players, they went from 100 to 100 to 250, I believe.
Yep.
Is that right? 200. Sorry. 200 greatest guitar players of all time. And the guy is not on the list.
That's insane.
I don't understand. I know this is about Peter Frampton, but I'm going to give a shout out to a couple others because this is a sore spot for me. George Benson, Alan Holdsworth, Al Di Meola, and Neil Sean from Journey. Those guys aren't on the list compared to some of the people on the list. Absurd. But Frampton not being on that list is insane. So
yeah. He's like a guitar god in many ways too.
He's a guitar god. Like his playing is so technically good. And you ask Clapton, you ask these, you know, Jimmy Page, these other folks from the 70s who are guitar gods, he would be a no-brainer on the list. But having said that, I think his singing is very underrated.
Absolutely.
He's got a beautiful range. He can have the soulful, you know, I think about, you know, Baby, I Love Your Ways. It's just a very smooth, mellow song. But then, you know, Do You Feel Like We Do? He can crank it and get raspy, and he's got a beautiful range.
I Totally agree. I think that with Peter Frampton, the most underrated aspect of his career is twofold. I think it's his session work. I think people just don't know that he worked with so many iconic musicians, like we talked about earlier. I think that that's part of it. But I also think it's the fact that he had a career post Frampton Comes Alive that is really, really underrated. And I think just because a lot of the albums didn't really make the charts per se, doesn't mean it's not worth your time or energy. And I think he got better and better, especially into the 21st century. He released Fingerprints, which is a gem of an album. It's the one that won him a Grammy for Best Pop Instrumental Album. And he worked with, oh my God, some huge names on that album, like Mike McCready, Warren Haynes, Bill Wyman, so many others. And it's a testament too to just how many great musicians want to work with him. And I've said this about Sheryl Crow and Lenny Kravitz and other artists, but the fact that if Hall of Famers and really great, talented people want to work with you, you're doing something right. And Frampton was definitely always doing something right for the last, oh my God, 60 years. I can't believe it, quite honestly. He's been around that long.
Yeah. And I'm going to make a connection here. I know the last time I was on your show here, we talked about Toto, but I feel like there's some serious parallels between the two, because a lot of people fixate on Toto on one, maybe two albums. We think about Frampton, people fixate on Frampton Comes Alive, but you think about the session work that people don't know about. We talked about that on the Toto episode. We talk about it on this episode. And a lot of Hall of Famers want both Frampton and wanted Toto to work with them. There's some parallels, even though their style is very different. And I don't know if you agree with me or disagree there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like Frampton, Toto, they're known for like three or four really big songs. And I think that a lot of people forget, like, that they played on Beat It. They played on Cheap Trick albums. They're all over the map in terms of the landscape of rock and roll in that era, and they continue to work. And I think that that's definitely true. And I think that's the thing, is Frampton never stopped. Like, it didn't just stop with Frampton Comes Alive. He remained alive. He's still alive, of course.
There we go. I knew the pun was coming.
Oh, well, you know, I get some listeners that always appreciate my puns, and then some who don't, but you got to make the show fun and interesting. So,
of course,
you know, and engaging. So, but, there'll be plenty more to come over the next several episodes, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I totally agree with you, Wes, about his career. It's also a one of a kind career too. Like, no one quite had a career like Peter Frampton that just navigated through these different bands, all these different artists that he worked with and his own solo work. I just think that it makes him almost like an iconoclast in a way.
Yeah. And also, you know, he went through a lot of highs and lows in his personal life. And, you know, artists are inspired by life events, whether positive, negative, tragic, joyful. He went through a lot of shit. He really did.
Absolutely.
And the glass half full attitude, he just bounced back. The guy's resilient, you know, through personal life turmoil, accidents, you know, the highs of Frampton Comes Alive to maybe some criticism for appearing on magazines and doing other things that critics and contemporaries maybe didn't like, but it didn't matter. He was going to put out the music that he loved, and he's resilient. He embodies the word of resilience. Absolutely.
He really is. And that actually leads me perfectly to my next question, Wes. It's like you read my mind. Do you feel like we do? I think so. Okay. So let's move on to more of a serious note. Peter Frampton was diagnosed with infusion body miosis, a progressive muscle disorder that hindered his ability to play the guitar. It's a heartbreaking thing because Peter Frampton is one of the world's most renowned guitarists, like we've been talking about this whole episode. And a lot of people were not sure if he was ever able to play the guitar again. And he was also an artist that toured quite frequently. So just a very devastating thing when that happened. And somehow through like a miracle in many ways, he was able to like control that, and he's able to continue playing the guitar and to perform in to his fans and audiences across the world. How would you say Frampton has become a beacon of hope and resilience in light of this, Wes?
I mean, I'm going to go back to the concert I went to last year. You know, his tour is called the Never Say Never Tour. And he didn't think he was going to be able to perform after, you know, once COVID hit in 2020. And he put everything he had vocally, physically, you know, in interactions with the concert, with the concert goers and the audience, he put everything he had into the concert I went to, let alone probably all of them, like it was the last concert that he was ever going to play. And I don't think I have ever been to a concert that got me more emotional than that one. It was, I was the most remarkable performance live of anyone I have ever seen. And that's a big statement because I've seen some great artists. But the fact that he could be off going to Hawaii and vacationing somewhere, but has chose to share his gift and what he loves to do with everyone. And as he stated, this may be the last day I'm able to play guitar, folks, but we're going to have a great time. He is such an inspiration to fellow artists, to others who have the condition that he does, to others that are struggling. There was not a dry eye in that audience, including my own, for much of that concert. And the emotion he put into it, I and myself, everyone in that audience, couldn't thank him enough if we saw him in person for what he gave us. And I think because of all of that, he was just so inspirational. He played for 3 hours, that concert.
Wow.
3 hours. My favorite moment, though, the guy had the most beautiful sense of humor. Most beautiful sense of humor. And he would make everything a sad topic, and then he would turn it on and have a fun, you know, quip and a joke. And he played Do You Feel Like We Do for about 30 minutes. We talked about how it was 15 on the album. But 30 minutes, and you knew that was the last song, right? And then, of course, he was going to play more as an encore. And he gets on the mic and he goes, well, folks, normally in years past, we would run off the stage, we would come back out, and we would play you a few more songs. And he says, but I'm in this computer chair you see me in, and that would take about 45 minutes for me to do. So we're just going to stay and play some more music if that's okay with you. And the crowd went nuts. It went absolutely nuts. And he launched into all the Humble Pie stuff at the end.
Oh, wow.
And he did 3 Humble Pie songs, he and his band. And then he ended with While My Guitar Gently Weeps. But you went from this humor to this rock, to this joyous rock, to this everyone crying at the end. I mean, it was the most beautiful emotional roller coaster I've ever been on in a concert. And myself and everyone can't thank him enough. He was so inspirational that night and moving forward. So I can't say enough good things about that event.
Oh, I love to hear that, because I think that he could easily just said, you know what, I played for, 2 hours beforehand, give or take.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm done. I don't have to do anything for you guys. And that's really nice that he was able to continue the show and also break out songs that you would not expect him to play from, you know, Humble Pie. That I think that's incredible, Wes.
Yeah, it was amazing. I don't know if I'll ever have that much joy replicated in a concert that I'll go to. It was just, it touched everyone's emotions. It was fantastic.
Oh, I love that story. That just that warms my heart personally, because I just think Frampton's just a special soul in so many ways. And the fact is, and I'll just say this now because, you know, that we'll kind of transition to our next name. But when he was at last year's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and he participated in the Sheryl Crow tribute, and he performed the guitar solo on Every Day is a Wine Road. He was sitting down in a chair, and the crowd went kind of crazy for him, and he could still shred, and he did a great job, I thought.
Oh, yeah, and the mic was hot, and I think it was hot on purpose, because even during some of the lyrics, you know, in the chorus, and she was singing, he was still playing licks and everyone could hear it, but it wasn't too loud, you know, but you don't really hear those guitar licks while prominent performers are singing, you know? And so they definitely wanted to put a lot of emphasis on him, and he played well, like you said, he was shredding and he was having the time of his life.
I totally agree. And I was in the room for it. He nailed it. And I said to one of my friends afterwards, I said, he's probably going to be strongly considered now, because he not only showed up to a ceremony, but also Sheryl Crow name dropped him in her induction speech, and also mentioned even at the ceremony, like, oh, I hope he gets in one day. And I think that that was a very special moment, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm jealous you got to see it live.
Oh, I'm more jealous if you go into him playing an extra hour, because that just seems incredible too. But thank you, Wes. Let's talk about some of our favorite songs in Peter Frampton's catalog. What are some of your favorites, Wes?
Well, I spent a lot of time, you know, before this podcast, re-listening to some of my favorite albums of his, not just the main Frampton Comes Alive stuff. But I would say, if I were to make kind of my list of five or six, you know, Do You Feel Like We Do, Show Me the Way, and Baby, I Love Your Ways, you can listen to those on the, you know, his traditional album playing of those on Frampton Comes Alive. But also, a few years ago, he did an all-acoustic album, and all of those tracks are beautiful there. So whether you like the live stuff or acoustic, you can experience all of those. You know, I'll Give You Money from the Frampton album in 75, I think is great. I'm In You, which I believe was his highest charting song, which was post-Frampton Comes Alive, is definitely there for me. But I love the song from 1981, Breaking All the Rules, that title track. I just think it's a great, great blend of his vocal prowess along with killer guitar chops.
Yeah, that's an album that I don't think enough people give praise. And I think that it's definitely one that I really enjoy as well. Do you mind if I list some of my favorite
of course, I'd love
Frampton
to hear
songs? One album that I really like that a lot of people just, I think, overlook is the album Where I Should Be. And this is after I'm In You, from 1979. And I really like a few of the songs on there. I really like the opening track, which is I Can't Stand It No More. It's more of like his bluesier stuff. And I really like the song It's a Sad Affair, which closes that album as well.
Those are great songs.
Those are. And I think that he just has this ability to capture your attention, unlike a lot of artists. And I just think that he just brings his A game to that to that particular album. Another one that I like on Frampton, which is 75, right before Frampton Comes Alive, is The Crying Clown. Are you familiar with that one?
I am, yes.
That's another just hidden gem in his catalog. And even his version of Signed, Sealed, Delivered, I like that. I like it. He puts a good spin on it.
Yeah, he, like you said, he's the master of covers as well. While keeping the spirit of the original recording intact, but putting his own spin on it. And I think that's really difficult to do with a cover of a great song.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And a few others I'm going to mention was the song Above All from 2003, the album Now. It's just a very beautiful song.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, he, post Frampton Comes Alive, he continued to get better and better and better. And he's still, I saw the other day that he just released a bluesy single with Joe Bonamassa.
Mm-hmm.
A great, you know, amazing blues rock you know, mostly blues guitar player. And so he's still putting out stellar music to this day.
He did a really good featured track on Dion, Dion, the iconic Italian-American singer from New York.
Of course. The Wanderer. Yeah.
The Wanderer, of course. Yeah, he's such an icon in that, in my neck of the woods. And he did an album called Stomping Ground, and he had Bruce Springsteen, Boz Sags, Mark Knopfler, so many great artists. And one of them was Peter Frampton, and he performed on a song with Peter called There Was a Time from 2021 that I highly recommend to listeners.
Yeah, again, continuing to put out stellar music year in and year out.
Yeah, and he never stops.
Could you say he's breaking all the rules of aging and time?
You know, that's why we love Peter. He breaks all the rules.
Yeah.
We picked some really great songs. I'm glad to be focused a lot on Post Frampton Comes Alive, because he's so much more than that album. And I mean, it's a great album. There's a reason why he's known for it. But I'm glad that we kind of thought of other songs. And I think we got a pretty rocking playlist.
I would agree for sure. And, you know, I also think a couple others that maybe don't get the credit that are also from Frampton Comes Alive. Something's happening.
Which ones do you want to mention?
Something's Happening and Doobie Wah, I think Doobie Wah is the beginning. He goes, all right, we're going to get a little funky now. And then the crowd just kind of erupts. And I don't know, that album, just you can have a rough day in your life and you put that album on and you feel good when you listen to it. It lifts your spirits. I just can't say enough good things about that album.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about a few other awards that Peter Frampton has won over the years. He won a Grammy for Best Pop Instrumental Album for Fingerprints in 2007. He has a Hollywood Walk of Fame star that he got in 1979. And Frampton Comes Alive is frequently on Best Live Albums of All Time list. It's always in the top five on Rolling Stone. And like in 1976, Rolling Stone called Frampton Comes Alive the best album of the year by their readers poll, which I think is the one that matters the most. Not the critics, but the fans, because those are ones who matter the most, I think. So, yeah, he's got some awards under his belt. He also had like a People's Choice Award, I think, for Favorite Male Artist. Let's move on to the main event, so to speak. Peter Frampton was first eligible for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998, and he's currently a finalist for induction for the class of 2024 in the performers category. So let's get started, Wes, before we even like get any further. I would say Frampton's reaction to his nomination has been nothing short of beautiful.
Yeah, he's just, like I said, and you've mentioned it too, he's just a positive human, and he's like, it's an honor to be nominated, and I'm just thrilled to be mentioned.
Yeah, and he's been very active on social media. He's been thanking his fans for voting in the fan vote, but he's also been congratulated by inductees like Sheryl Crow and among others, and I think what I really like about Frampton is, like you're saying, like he's a beacon of positivity in the sense that he was actually like very congratulatory, especially Foreigner and Lenny Kravitz and artists that he's like, oh yeah, like I they all deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. And he just released a video today, and I was telling Wes a little bit about it, but he made like a 1-minute video package that basically was a case for why he should be in the Rock and Roll of Fame. It listed all his attributes, like how many millions of albums he sold, how he has collaborated with like a lot of the names that we mentioned, how Frampton Comes Alive is still iconic, how he has influenced so many guitarists, and they list all the artists that he's worked with, influenced, all that stuff. And they did it in about a minute. And I thought it was nothing short of incredible. Now, some people have criticized Foreigner for doing something similar a few weeks ago. Now, here's the thing. There's no rules that says they can't campaign for themselves. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, like, movies have been doing that for forever, like, for your consideration. Like, how is this any different? And I don't know. I think it's very clever that him and Horner are campaigning for themselves. And what that tells me, in a way, is that not only are they excited and enthused about their nomination and potential prospects to get inducted, but they'll likely show up. And that's something that the Hall likes to think about, is we got to put on a show. And that is what those ceremonies are. In many ways, those ceremonies are fundraisers to help keep the foundation, the museum, and the brand alive. So I don't know, if you play ball with the Hall in that sense, you, as a producer or someone involved behind the scenes, I would want him in just for that reason.
Sure. And it's, what's interesting about it is, you know, we, you and others in the space, we love discussing, debating, analyzing, researching about artists and worthiness of being in the Hall. But I think, like you articulated there, there's also, you got to, I guess you got to play, you know, play ball with the Hall a little bit. And does that, you know, it's not unethical, but does it sit right with fans or with the Hall or what have you? I think there's nothing wrong with putting out a little video clip. I saw the Foreigner one. I haven't seen the Frampton one. Did you see the little video of Paul McCartney?
Yes, that was music to my ears, because I love Foreigner. We did an episode with Dave Fassini on Foreigner, and yeah, we were talking a little bit about it. And yeah, it's just like, when friggin' Paul McCartney, a former Beatle, is campaigning for you, that's nothing short of like, you don't get a bigger endorsement than that, in my opinion.
and dropping an F-bomb in the middle of his short 5-second video. it's hilarious. Yeah, I understand why people make these videos and have others speak on their behalf. The Frampton argument is a no-brainer to me. I'm a big, you know, Hall of Fame person, whether it's sports, music. And my simple question here, I look at it and I go, can you write the history of rock and roll music in an era without including someone's name? And I think for Frampton, the answer is no, you have to include him. Frampton Comes Alive was massive. He arguably was, for a short period of time, the biggest solo male rock artist in the world in 76 and 77. And even if he had just stopped his career at Frampton Comes Alive, and he didn't do anything afterward, which would break my heart because I love Grease, the title track, all of his work beforehand with The Herd, with Humble Pie, his session work and his solo work, all of that, he's worthy. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't know how you feel about it yourself, but what are your thoughts on his worthiness and likelihood?
Admittedly, Peter Frampton is not someone that I think about a lot for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think that, in all honesty, I feel like he is a perfect candidate in many ways for the musical excellence category that they have, where it's someone who's this figure that is sort of dipping their toes into different things, like they're a performer, they're a producer, they're a songwriter, a session musician. I always thought if they were ever going to honor Frampton, it would be in that way. But seeing him at the 2023 ceremony and this reaction that he got from the audience, that made me kind of second guess myself and say, you know, maybe he could be a performer. And I think with Peter Frampton, his reaction has been nothing short of incredible. And the fact is that he's this enduring figure that means a lot to a lot of people. And even like talking to people about this episode to prepare for it, everyone has good things to say about Peter Frampton. Like, everyone's a fan of Peter Frampton. He's one of the most likable people, I would say, on the entire ballot, because it's not like a polarizing artist. Like, he is just someone that is just universally well-liked, and he means a lot to a lot of people. I think he hits right at the sweet spot for a lot of these voters who are a little bit older, who remember, say, when Frampton Comes Alive came out and his prime, that works hugely, hugely in his favor. And let's face it, he is one of the biggest stars on his ballot because of that album. Yeah. He's just a well-known celebrity figure. And I think part of the reason with Frampton of why he's so worthy, I think, is that he's underrated. He's thought of as like a one-album wonder. And that's really not the case. Like, he has other songs and works that he's done. It's just sometimes one album or one work kind of overshadows a really great career. And I think that happens with Frampton. And I think for me, looking at this ballad and how he's doing on the fan vote and his reaction to his nomination, I can't see a scenario where he doesn't get in somehow, some way. I think he has enough votes for as a performer, especially now that they have seven nominees that they can vote for. And I feel like if you're thinking about the return of classic rock, which we've talked about on the show when we analyzed the 2024 nominees, let's face it, they need classic rock. It's what is their core audience at the museum. It's always at the top of the fan votes that they have, like the kiosks, but it's also a way to bring ticket sales in. And let's face it, the last ceremony, which I went to, they struggled really hard to with ticket sales at Barclay Center. And Peter Frampton is someone who is a nostalgic figure to so many. And I think he would absolutely come perform and accept the award. And I mean, I think besides Cher, I think that he's pretty much the next artist, I would say, that is kind of almost a shoo-in to get in. I would be stunned if he doesn't get in.
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of see your point there initially about the Musical Excellence Award. And honestly, I think if he didn't get enough votes and they gave him the Musical Excellence Award, he would be thrilled. You know, just to be in there. And, you know, I like to make comparisons. We talked about Frampton and Toto a little bit. I kind of see him, and this is a little bit more of a stretch, but, you know, there was the argument when Lionel Richie a couple years ago was nominated, and people thought, well, don't you think they'd put the Commodores in, you know, because that group had such a great output. But, you know, maybe they look at Lionel Richie as the more recognizable name, even though he had just a few albums that had a ton of hits. I kind of equate Frampton to him, where he kind of has the complete package of work: producing, solo artist, he's in successful bands, he's got it all, right? I mean, he's had an all-encompassing career like Lionel Richie. And so he definitely deserves to be inducted. And initially I was thought, oh yeah, I hope he gets in. I agree with you, Nick. I think he's a lock one way or another. And if he's not, I think you're going to see an uproar.
I think with him, I think it's just the fact that he has a lot of things going for him. People underestimate the power of the politics of behind this, is that he has respect to musicians and especially guitarists. That's very clear. And people he's collaborated with that are still with us, they'll easily vote for him. And also the fact that he is well-liked in the music industry, and the fact that he just invokes this idea of, like, he really wants this and he deserves it. And I feel like, you know, you got to honor these artists while you still can and while he should still perform. And I think Frampton invokes this notion that he just has this presence about him that makes you just want to root for him. Even if you don't even like his music, you still, as a human being, want to see him get in, because he went through so much in the last five years.
And he still is. Yeah. Yeah. And my challenge would be to anyone listening, if you've never listened to Frampton before, or, you know him a little bit, put on Frampton Comes Alive, listen to half of the album, and if you don't enjoy the experience, I'll be shocked.
It's infectious. It's an infectious album in so many ways. Yeah, he's so great, and I'm really rooting for Peter. And I'm just, on a quick personal note, I probably should have said this early episode, but I don't know if you know this, but he actually follows me in the podcast on Twitter.
Oh, really?
It's a long story, but I'll condense it to like 30 seconds to a minute, but in a nutshell, there was an article that I found, and it was about the Jan Wenner fallout. And it was one of the foundation board members that was quoted in an article about you know, like how he disagreed with Jan Wenner's interview, if you're familiar with the New York Times interview that he did, that led to his resignation from the board and the foundation at the Rock Hall, which he co-founded. And I remember I shared it, and a lot of people liked it. And keep in mind, Peter Frampton was not tagged in the article. He wasn't even mentioned in the article, but he liked it, he retweeted it, and then he followed me. And it was like the craziest night of my life, because I'm like, wait, Peter Frampton? And I had to look, because now on Twitter they have like this stupid verified thing, and you're like, is it really this person? You don't know, but it really was the real deal. So
maybe he'll listen to this episode and appreciate the praise. You never know.
Yeah, I actually wrote, he did that video that was released earlier today, and I said to myself, maybe I wrote as a reply, like, would you like to be a guest on Rock in Retrospect? So maybe Frampton will be shown the way to Rock in Retrospect.
Ayo.
We'll see. I don't know if it'll happen, because he's been doing the media rounds for, you know, it's like Sirius and like so many websites and publications, but you know, yeah, I got nothing to lose, and he follows me, so at least he looked at something and he liked it, and you know, so it was just crazy. So really quick, Wes, who do you think would induct Peter Frampton into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, it would be fun. I know it's pretty recent, but it would be really cool, I think, if Sheryl Crow came back and inducted him, because she was such an advocate, right? And I think it was her very first concert she ever went to with her mom, and you know, or I think it was her mom or her friend's mom and a bunch of her girlfriends, was to see Frampton. I think she would be great. I mean, he's so beloved that I think you could pick a ton of people that would induct him. You know, he did. I know we had talked about this beforehand, I think a little bit, but before the podcast, but he did appear on the Dolly Parton Rockstar album. Was that what it was called?
Yes, he did.
Maybe Dolly shows up and inducts him. Who knows? What are your predictions or thoughts?
So with Peter Frampton, I think it, you know, Sheryl Crow would be lovely to be the person to induct him, because she has been advocating for him, and he performed at her ceremony and last year. And I think it'd be a way of like returning the favor, so to speak. Yeah. But, so I think that would be really awesome for her to do that. But looking at like artists that he either collaborated with or has worked with, I feel like, I don't know, I want to say maybe like a famous guitarist. So maybe like a Joe Perry or Richie Sambora or even like Eric Clapton or Keith Richards, or I don't know. I feel like you could get some big names with Peter Frampton if you want to go that route. And of course, Cheryl's like a great artist. We did an episode on her.
Sure.
But I'm trying to think, like, I feel like he could easily, there's so many possibilities, I think.
One name that just popped into my mind, because I think he played for a little bit with him in his all-star band too, would be Ringo.
Ringo would be a good one.
Who doesn't like Ringo? I mean, you got Ringo and Peter, the two probably the most positive humans in rock music. I mean, how could you not enjoy that?
And it would be full circle, because Ringo was on Frampton's solo debut album.
Yep.
So that would be a really excellent, like, you know, feather to his cap with his legacy. I think that, yeah, there's so many possibilities, quite honestly. Another one that would be a fun one, and this might be someone that maybe it could work out, I don't know, but Joe Satriani or I can never pronounce his name, Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah.
Joe Bonamassa would be a fantastic one as well, or even Cameron Crowe.
That would be really cool. You know, I think what's interesting about certain awards ceremonies compared to the Rock Hall tends to have, you know, one artist or, you know, a group induct someone.
Yeah.
Whereas in a lot of other award ceremonies, they tend to have a couple of different artists come together. So, you know, maybe you get Ringo and Cheryl together. You get kind of a small group and they could induct. I think there's a lot of power in that. And I wish they would do that more.
Me too. I totally agree. So you actually mentioned what was going to be my last question to you, Wes, which is Frampton collaborated with Dolly Parton on her Rockstar album with a cover of his iconic song, Baby, I Love Your Way. What do you think of that version that Dolly did with Peter?
I enjoyed it. Hey, I think, you know, there were a lot of people that were maybe a little bit critical, which I don't understand, of the Dolly inclusion in the hall. And she even tried to take herself off the ballot. She didn't want to be included. But I just think it's pretty awesome that she brought together all these amazing rock artists to make art, you know, to do these covers and make this rock album. So I thought it was fantastic. You know, do I think it's the greatest version of that song ever made? By all means, no. But to have two artists with different backgrounds come together and you know, re-record this great song, I thought it was a fun adventure.
Me too. And I like the fact that Dolly invited a lot of really fantastic artists, legendary Hall of Fame, most of them. And what stuck out to me about that his inclusion on that album was the fact that he's one of the very few artists that is not in the Hall of Fame that is a guest on that particular one. Because she has so many on there. She has Ann Wilson, John Fogerty, Steven Tyler, Stevie Nicks, Sheryl Crow now, Joan Jett, Elton John, Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney, Pat Benatar. Like, I'm forgetting names, but, you know, like, these are like heavyweights that she's able to bring in. And Peter Frampton's one of the very few that is not in. So that always stood out to me a little.
Yeah, well, maybe it's Dolly pushing for him in her subtle way, too. You never know.
And she's a rock star now, so, you know.
He is a rock star.
And she, you know, she's a rock star musician and a rock star human being.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we're talking about Frampton on this episode, but one of the coolest moments I've ever seen at a Rock Hall ceremony was she and Rob Halford singing Jolene together.
I was in the room for that.
I bet that was quite a combination of artists on that stage. It was pretty cool to watch on video, but in person, I imagine it was thrilling to see all those people together.
Yeah, it was a once in a lifetime experience that I don't think I'm ever gonna outdo, quite honestly.
Yeah, I will say this. I was gonna ask you, do you know where the ceremony is this year? Is it Cleveland or is it okay? If Frampton gets in, I'm gonna do my best to make it to that ceremony. I'd love to see it.
And if you do, Wes, we got to, of course, meet in person finally.
For sure. Yeah, I've never been to a ceremony, but I'd love to go once. And this would be a great reason to go if he gets in.
I mean, as someone who has went to all three of the cities, L.A., New York, and Cleveland, I think the Cleveland ones are low-key the best ones because, you know, Cleveland, they need it the most, first of all, economically. Mm-hmm. But second, it's also this idea of, you know, it just has this more feel to it because the museum's right there. And I don't know. There's just like an energy and vibe with it that I really, really enjoy. So, yeah, I hope if he gets in, I hope we finally meet in person.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Wes, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight to talk about Peter Frampton.
Thanks for having me. It was a wonderful conversation, and thanks for what you do to analyze music and the Rock Hall of Fame for all of us that love it.
Why, thank you so much. Anywhere that they can find you, Wes, or anything you'd like to plug?
You know, I not so much in the music space, but if you're on Instagram and you want to follow my pickleball journey, Wesley Gabriels and Pickleball is where you'll will find me and my adventures in life.
That is awesome. They should definitely follow you on there. And if you want to follow the podcast, of course, you can follow it at Rock and Retro Pod on pretty much anywhere like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We would love to hear you we would love to hear your thoughts and anything you'd like to share with us about any of the episodes that we produce. Thank you again, Wes, for coming on the show. And thank you to our listeners for checking us out.